This is where we hold them! This is where we fight!
Now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.
Rob, what's good, homie?
See this book right here, Mike? Bowling Psychology. I've been reading this in preparation for all weekend of watching and betting on the two shows for the world championships. And guess what, Mike? This book paid off because my mental game and your mental game were on point this weekend, betting on bowling on Bet Rivers, because, man, we absolutely crushed them this weekend. I mean, I am on a cloud nine still. Calling you after EJ went seven through the face to go under, which nobody realized, but I was watching at a plus 375, taking on that big bet. Man, what an awesome last 2 days betting and watching the live shows have been. So, yeah, I just wanted to get into that. Bowling psychology, people. If you want to win money, read that before you start betting.
No, but don't give the people false advice. It's not just about the psychology of it. It's about watching and knowing what you're watching and making – really educated guesses about how things are going to develop.
Right.
Right. And that's what we did. And there was only one time, and we'll talk about our bets as we run the ladder in a few minutes here, but there was only one time, I think, Rob, where you and I weren't on the same page. We went against each other and you won that one. I believe you won that bet. I believe that the person won in the under hit. So there was only one time where we weren't on the same page. Every other time, we were both like, nope, this is what's going to happen. Here's how it's going to go, you know, and we were right. We were right a lot of the time. I mean, listen, I ended up for the entire World Series bowling. I started with a $50 deposit. I sent that back at one point to my account, and I ended up plus 700 for the whole World Series gambling. And I mean, Not only was I plus 700 bucks, but I mean the amount of bets I put in, the amount of action I was able to sweat, the amount of fun that I had watching the match play, the shows. I had bets in every single round of this World Series, pretty much. I mean, there were a few exceptions to that here and there, but I mean, full degen for like 2 weeks. And I ended up plus 700. I got to say, that's a huge win. You go full degen, you don't expect to come back plus 700. But I was able to make that happen. So we've been on fire lately. There's no league review. I don't have a league review. Why did it? Because
you stayed home to bet.
I forget what was going on. But, yeah, I had something going on too. Oh, that's right. I stayed home to bet. I stayed home to bet the show on Tuesday night. I didn't go bowl because – I wanted to watch the show live, and the Bolero I bowl at, the Wi-Fi is terrible. So I knew I can't rely on it to be able to get a bet in. So I was like, all right, we're just going to stay home and bet. So I didn't bowl last week. I don't think I'm bowling this week either. My daughter has a soccer game Tuesday night, so I'm likely not going Tuesday night because I want to watch her game. No league review this week. So, with that said, we still have a lot to talk about tonight, obviously. I guess we're going to jump right in. Yes, we're going to jump right into our review. So we're going to run the ladder on the World Championship here. Okay, that's the first thing we're going to do here. And we'll talk about our bets within that. And then when we're done, we're going to do our rundown for the entire World Series. Okay, all the awards we're giving out tonight span the length of the World Series of bowling. Okay, so we could choose anyone for any reason in the length of the World Series. So get your picks ready. You can play along with us in a few. All right, let's run the ladder, Rob. Do you want to run the ladder from nine?
Yeah,
quickly.
Yeah, we could. I can go through the yesterday show a little bit.
Okay, so you had Packy versus Martel, right?
Yeah.
And listen, I think the debate is over about what company makes the better urethane products across the board. What, no matter what hardness we're talking about.
I was talking. I was tweeting that out.
Actually. Yeah, I saw that. And if you knew that Martel was going to use the 78, and if you knew that Packy was going to use a Black Pearl hammer, you know, just based off of that, I'll be honest with you, I'm going to take Packy in that matchup. And we did. And I believe we took the over in that matchup. Yes.
Yeah.
And did. The over hit. We need, it was a miracle that it hit, wasn't it? Because Martel switch balls, threw a couple strikes, then needed a double in the 10th for the over to hit. And we parlayed it. So we needed it to hit. And shout to Martel, show love. It's the Brooklyn way. He gets up, takes it seriously to the end, doubles in the 10th, and we hit our first bet. We got it rolling right off the bat.
Real quick, though, you know, it's funny how many bets go down to a lot of the shots that don't mean anything on those shows.
I know. It's so scary.
It's so scary.
You know, you often don't even get to see the guy throw the shots that matter for your bet. You have to monitor the Bet Rivers app and see if you hit it or not because they don't show those meaningless shots on TV. But you see a guy, like, pick another ball up off the rack, and you're, like, screaming, no, no, no test here. We need it. Oh, it's terrible.
It is. It's like when you bet on a, you know, a sport and you're in garbage time, right? Essentially what it is, right? It's exactly what that is. It's garbage time. They're switching balls. They're trying to figure out what to do for the next match. And here you are, like, sweating out, like, a three-figure, like, parlay. Like, you need them to, like, either you need them to strike or double, or you need them to, like, not strike.
Right.
And that happened again today with EJ, you know.
Yeah, Charlie Tapp, what up, in the chat, asking, how did Martel get away with powder flying out of the holes? I mean, that's a fair question. I don't have an answer for you there, obviously. He wasn't really wiping the ball off either, was he? Am I correct about that? I don't think he was wiping the ball off during the match. I'll be honest. I have to plead ignorance here. I don't know, Charlie, what the specific rules are at the PBA level about the use of rosin and what you're allowed or not allowed to do. I believe, I don't really bowl a lot of USBC stuff, and I don't tap my ball in my rosin bag before I bowl. But I believe USBC rules are you can do that, but you have to wipe it off. Am I correct about that?
I think you've always had to wipe it off, from my understanding, but I don't know the rule here. But real quick on the bet that I made, I had a free profit boost on that. So a $25 bet got me $137 back, because I was plus 450 on that bet. So that Martel double in the 10th was $115 double for me in garbage time. So I'm not talking like $10 here. Like, it was $115 swing for me. Started me on the right foot.
Yeah, no, we got off to a hot start, no question. Andy in the chat mentioned he didn't apply it to the ball, just his fingers. Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And I want to be clear. I'm not saying he did apply it to the ball. But again, I don't know what the rules are about, loose rosin from your hand while you're putting your hand in the ball. I don't know if that's something that would be a violation or not. You know, if there's somebody in the chat who can,
I don't know. I don't really care, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and it's in, it's a moot point. He lost. Obviously, it didn't. You know, it wasn't a factor.
Yeah, he struggled just like I think a lot of the righties struggled in that right lane. Out of the gate, he's struggling.
You mean lefties.
The lefty struggling on the right lane. I think he was the first to have to deal with that lane, and you saw what it could do. Started out slow. Packy started out hot. There was just – he was playing catch-up from the get-go, and Packy looked to be pretty comfortable early in that match.
Yeah, just quickly, Jim in the chat correcting me. You can't put rosin on the ball anymore at all. Okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Next match.
Yeah.
Packy.
Kyle Sherman.
Right. Yeah. And was this the one that we disagreed on?
I believe it was. I don't think I liked you liked Kyle Sherman in this match. I remember you saying, I did it. After seeing Packy Bowl 250, I was going to take Packy all day. I bet Packy and the under at 440.5 and won that bet as well. Plus like 200. I mean, I was hot. I mean, I like literally probably lost two bets. Like,
yeah, I took Dex. That's we veered on that one. I took Kyle Sherman in the over, and I lost that bet.
Yeah, and I remember that was looking pretty bad until Kyle started to kind of lose himself a little bit in the middle of the match. He almost went Brooklyn, I believe, twice, and then he missed out. Yeah, he washed out, and then he missed a 10 pin?
Yeah.
In the 10th to kind of steal it a little bit. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty much over. But, yeah, that certainly put the nail in the coffin, right?
Yeah.
So, right. In the next game, you had Packy against Erik Jones.
And Erik Jones.
And, we were trying to ride the Packy train.
We were. That was
the one. We were riding the Packy train. So, we went Packy in the over, which was low that game. It was 420.5, right? Yeah. So because the game before was like a 188 to 190 something game.
199 and 188.
Yep. So they lowered the over-under to 420.5. We hit the over. We were right on the over, but we had the wrong person. You know, we bet against Erik Jones there, and we bet Packy. So another loser there.
Listen, we went – I mean, it was – correct in going against Erik Jones that match. First game on TV.
Packy's
already bowled two games. You know, he looked comfortable even though he was starting to, the big thing about the match was, Mike, here, that maybe looking at it, hindsight, right, is Packy did start to lose his reaction at the end of that game when he was bowling Kyle Sherman. And then I'm like, well, at that point, I thought he was going to start going to perform, to move to like performance, like resin, right? And he did. And then the resin just didn't look good. I mean, I think one shot, it hooked off his foot on the right lane and then had to move back to urethane at the end of that game. And Erik Jones just didn't like had it from the get-go, right, with the urethane, with his black hammer. I still think he would have lost even if Packy did start with urethane, in my opinion. I mean, Erik Jones bowled 260. You know what I mean? Right. Yeah, he had it. And he was comfortable. For somebody who has never bowled on TV, man, these young kids, Mike, these young kids have nerves of steel. Between him and Dio Bernard, I feel like, man, these kids are first games bowling on TV. Like, they don't even look like they're nervous.
Yeah, well, a lot of them have been there before. I mean, not in this setting, certainly, but in different settings, they do have some experience with it. But all right, so we lost that bet that game. We felt strongly going into the final match of the night that Erik Jones was going to win. And the reason we felt strongly about that was because the lane seemed to be volatile, I would say, on the left. And you really didn't know what Justin Knowles was going to do. And Jones obviously had a good look. Right, he seemed locked in for the most part. So I had two bets in this game. I put in a three-figure bet on Erik Jones straight because it was plus 100. And it was one of the few times in the night where I felt they had the wrong favorite. Bet Rivers usually has the right favorite, but in this match, they had the wrong favorite.
They were off. So, and we knew it. We knew it.
We hammered it because we knew they were off. And you like I said, you don't get many opportunities to do that. They make you pay with the odds. Like the reason we put in a parlay so much with the over under parlayed with a winner is because the odds are usually so low on the winner that you have to put the parlay in there to get it somewhat in your favor so that you don't have to put in a massive bet for a small return. So we hammered Erik Jones straight, right? And then I put in a side bet of Erik Jones to win and the over. And unfortunately, that didn't win. It was only a small bet. It was only a $15 bet.
Because sometimes when you feel like Erik Jones is going to win, you want to try to get a little bit, squeeze a little bit more if you can guess the over and under. Because you're already sure one of them is going to win. you want to.
I already have half of the parlay done, in my opinion. So I have a 50-50 shot on the other half. Let me take that shot, right? And and again, you were getting really good odds on that. It was plus 270. It was plus 270. So you were getting almost 3-1 on that. Yep. You know, and you only got to pick one of the legs because you feel strongly about the other one. So didn't go our way. I probably should have picked the under based on the on what the lanes were doing. But with Jones shooting 260 something the game before, you know, I could easily have imagined like a 240 to 220 or high 220, maybe 230 game. And it was only .455. You know, so
looking back at it, you know, it's easy to think about what you should have done, but really reality, the urethane transition was really nasty on those TV pairs. And
Jones bowled great, and it was cool to see his family hype. You know, they brought a hype to the show, which was nice to see. They were into it.
I want to talk a little bit about Eric Jones, and I want to compare him to Dio Bernard, okay? Because you got two very similar stories in a way, right? At least from the fans' perspective, you got two very young bulls making their first shows, and you know their hair looked the same, and you know they were even commenting about a little bit about it. It was like Rob Stone said his doppelganger or whatever.
Which yeah, they're both two-handed lefties, obviously.
It is. Eric Jones to me though has some feistiness to him. He has a little bit of edge. That I think if we see more Eric Jones, we're going to see more of it. There was one part of it where he threw a strike or he walked back and he's like, I'm still here. Yo, I love that shit.
He made the 6-7-10, Hoss.
Backing it up.
He made the 6-7-10 for the win. I know.
Dude, but he's got a little bit of edge to him, right? Like he's a little bit like got a little bit of personality to him. He's very sarcastic. He's very like he's got a little bit of an interesting personality to me, and I really like him. I like to see him make more shows, get more comfortable, and I'm still here. He was talking a little bit of shit. He was talking a little bit of shit to EJ on the show today too when he was down and he threw a strike, and yo, it worked. It worked because after you know we could go right into the match, we can transition right into today's match. But when Eric threw that strike and he said it, hey, I'm not going anywhere. I'm still here. What did EJ do in the next shot? He split, you know, and then EJ composed himself and then he doubled to beat Jones in the 10th, right? Like to shut him out. But Jones was not afraid and he let him have it a little bit. And it's just awesome to see Eric Jones like being there. His dad was great, playing the saxophone and cheering and standing up and yelling and he definitely brought a new personality and a new vibe to the show, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. I enjoyed watching him as well. In that first game today, we didn't talk about this one at all because my daughter had a soccer game early this morning and I put in this bet early this morning before I even left for the soccer game, knowing that I wasn't going to get back in time to put the bets in, and that's exactly what happened. So and this was a total odds-based bet for me. EJ's odds were very, very low. They weren't attractive at all in this game. So I went Eric Jones and the over at plus 350 for this game, and I put a small bet in on that of $20. So yeah, I just, you know, again, it was an odds-based bet. I was thinking, all right, maybe Jones pulls off the upset and the lefties are going to rule the day today. Obviously, that's not the way things turned out. Gad, you want to bring up that comment?
Yeah, Lumberflexual, what's up? In this chat says, Rob Stone says, you can't get in EJ's head, and then boom, split. I mean, it's exactly what happened. My bet, this was the one bet I lost today, the only bet I lost today. I had good odds on Eric Jones, and I think I felt to me like after watching Kyle Sherman's reaction yesterday, I kind of felt like Eric Jones was a good bet with the odds to beat EJ just because of what I saw yesterday from the right compared to what the lefties had, at least on the fresh or the first match. You know, you don't really consider it the fresh anymore because I'm a big practice.
Yeah, this is a fair point too. You know, Jim bringing up, you know, that solid nine from Jones completely changed the match. And yeah, I mean, listen, the match plays out the way it plays out, but obviously, you know, that was a determining factor there as it turned out. So yeah. We lost that first game. Then we linked up. Then the best bowling, the best tandem in the bowling betting world linked up, and we started to discuss.
What did I text you?
We texted, and I said, what are you thinking for this next game? And he was like, you said, EJ Tackett's winning this tournament, bro. That's what you text me back. You said, EJ Tackett's winning this tournament. So I said, okay, well, it's Tackett in the under then.
What did I say after? I said, EJ Tackett in the under the rest of the way.
No, that was after this game. Right. This game, you actually had the over this game, and I talked you into the under this game. I was like, nah, they're going to be under. You know, this kid played them in, and they're going to be squirrely. Well,
55.5, too, was like, oh, man.
Right, it was high. Yeah, it was high. So we hit this one, right? We hit this one at plus 185, okay? And this was – I don't know if you'll disagree with me on this or not. We didn't discuss the show much, obviously. We do it on here. This was the start of what you were going to see from the lefties all damn day.
Yeah, Favre started to lose his reaction, and you could see it. You could see it down the lane. He was hooking early a little bit, and then it was kind of lazy in the back of the lane. And this is when the lanes really started to transition for the lefties. And here EJ, who was throwing surface, probably I would imagine up 5 or 10 or whatever wherever he was playing in practice, which you can't see, which I would have loved to have been able to see. If anybody was in Detroit, if you'd be able to comment on what EJ was doing during practice, I would love to see it because he made himself a nice little shot there. And this is the start of it. And we saw it. We saw it watching it. We knew it. Favre was the ultimate like lane reader for us to throwing it.
Yeah. So you text me after that game and you were like, tack it and under for the rest of the day. That's what we're going with, Tackett in the under for the rest of the day. So the next game, it was Tackett against Jesper, and we both knew what was going to go down there.
This was the most sure bet I've ever had in my life after watching Jesper on his last TV on that pair. What show was it, Mike, did he make? Was it Shark?
Scorpion.
Scorpion. I don't know what to tell you about Jesper, Mike. I commented on Thursday when we had the show that he just refuses to get out of urethane. And I tweeted it. Randy called them bad breaks. Maybe one or two were bad breaks. Maybe those 10 pins were bad breaks.
The ball was hitting the pins so awkwardly. Even when he struck, it was awkward.
You know, yes. And here's the thing is, someone on Twitter responded to me, and to me, this was the point. Jesper's ball was ending up on the 8-pin spot after hitting the pocket,
Yep.
And that, to me, is the ultimate, like, visual for a bowler that your ball isn't going to strike or it's not going to strike enough to probably win.
Yep.
I know he knows it. He sees it, right? He has to. You look at EJ's ball and how that is hitting the pins. His ball is not ending up on the 9-pin slot. It's ending up, you know,
on the 8-pin slot.
On the 8-pin slot as a righty,
right?
Jesper's ability to not get out of the urethane and try something new and just be happy 7-pin and 10-pinning himself to another loss is going to keep him losing on TV. Unless he ends up on a show where he's like the only lefty and he could just like feed it and the pair stays fresh. He's going to have to someday learn how to get out of urethane and how to switch to performance or get his ball to face the pins the right way on the show, or else he's never going to get to that elite level to win titles. And it's frustrating to watch.
Well, I mean, he has a lot of titles already. He's got like a Hall of Fame career almost in the bank already. So, or I think it's a Hall of Fame career. Not almost. I think it is. So, but I agree with you. I agree with you. I mean, especially with the newer urethane And here's what was the convincing factor for me, and somebody just mentioned it in the chat. Like, you just watched Graham Fa, you know, and he's using a better ball than you're going to use, right? Now, I know you got more rev rate than him, you know, but still, like, he's using a better ball than you're using, and you're going to go out and try and do the same thing when he kind of just showed you that that ain't going to work. Right. So definitely I would view that as, you know, the stubbornness to get out of the urethane.
Mike, right? There's a ton of good comments coming in.
That okay, go ahead.
Lumber's always got some good stuff. Jesper starting in urethane and after two lefties uses insane. It's unacceptable for a seasoned pro to be this stuck. Refuse to use anything but urethane. Storm should be mad. I mean, it's not like, you know, I don't know. I would have liked to, I would really like to ask Timmy, to be honest with you, about Jesper and like why he's kind of keeping him in that urethane for so long. Is it a comfort thing? Is it a like not wanting to switch to a performance? Just Jim Ward asks, are we surprised that they're not trying to go into like any kind of phase two type ball? And I agree. Like we talked about that. Like, you know, you could go into something symmetrical like a phase two. We talked about IQ Tour, right? Maybe go something that you could go into maybe an ace sim like a gem, you know, something very smooth, maybe controls it, or maybe go to something longer and stronger if you feel like you have to jump all the way right. I'm just, you know, just it's I just don't know. I'm frustrated as a fan watching. Sean in the chat, it's so boring to watch all these two-handers throwing urethane. I think we need to all accept that fact, including myself, who agrees with you. The thing about like Jesper that is interesting to me is, and I talked about this Thursday, is that he's a seasoned veteran, Mike, at this point, right? And he's getting out bowled and out played by a lot of, you know, people. I mean, not this show. He lost to EJ, but in general, like the lefties, he bowled great, Mike, to make it, to get to this point. And I feel like that's what's happening with him is, look, he was the number three seed or whatever he was, right, on this show. So he had a bowl great all week to get here to World Championships. And then he just gets to these shows, and there's a bunch of lefty transition, and he just doesn't know how to get his ball to face the pins the right way with all that rev rate on top of it.
No doubt. So we had the EJ and the under – again, and that hit again. Okay, hit again. So in the final, it was going to be EJ and Russo, and the left was a mess. And you know, you knew that Russo was going to have to make perfect guesses to make it work. And EJ had a really good look, and you know, didn't seem like he was going to have to do anything major. Maybe switch balls. Like, I know I think he threw the same ball that was drilled differently at one point, at least on the right lane in the 10th frame in the game against Jesper. So I don't know if he switched to that or not ultimately, but it was still the same ball that he was throwing. So, like, his look wasn't really going to change all that much. And, yeah, listen, it played out exactly as we thought it was going to play out. Russo, right lane, can't get the 7-pin out. You know, just couldn't strike enough to stay with EJ, who wasn't killing them. You know, he wasn't shooting 259 every game. Okay, so again, we rode EJ and the under 435 and a half, and we hit it again.
Well, they pumped the odds up too to plus 375.
Yeah,
on the under EJ, and they brought the over and under down to 435 and a half. Yeah. Real quick, shouts to my guy Tim Ward in the chat. Happy birthday, brother. Hope you have a good one. For this match specifically, I felt a little bit bad for Russo in the fact that I think he, you know, at least he was trying different things, Mike. And this is what my criticism of Jesper is compared to Matt Russo, right? Matt Russo went 7-7-7, right? I think he started with an effect. Switches out of it to a hater, right? And then he strikes, and then he said, and he was switching balls, and he was trying
something. Yeah,
Jesper, I don't see him doing that. So that's why my criticism of Jesper is so much more than Russo. They obviously were dealing with a very, very tight back end lane from Urethane. EJ knew that. EJ, he look, this is the best bowler in the world, bro. He's incredible, right? And he knows what the left is dealing with. For him to switch out of that the Pride dynasty at that point would have probably been a bad decision. So he wants to stay in it. He knows he's probably going to get at least 215 out of it, I'd imagine. His execution was great this show. You know, he had maybe a couple of bad shots, but overall, Mike, EJ's execution was spot on in this show.
There were a couple shots, but here was the difference. When he made those shots, he already had the game in hand. And if he would have struck on those shots, it was absolutely putting his foot on the throat and shutting the door. And his opponents at no time in these matches had the ability to throw a big string at him.
No, and he did. He was throwing strings.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Heath would throw. He was throwing a big string, and then he had a couple hiccups here and there. But it didn't matter. Yeah, it didn't matter because they couldn't get a big string together.
Right. You know? This was the perfect. The stars aligned perfectly for him on this show. Right.
I mean, listen,
we talked about this. Like, this is what happened with Dio Bernard on his show.
You called it. You called it the other night. Alex Sorge gave you a big shout on Twitter. Shout to Alex Sorge. But yeah, you called it the other night and said EJ was going to win this tournament. You know, I had a future bet in on EJ as well. You did as well. You know, I won another hundred. I won another 165 off a $30 future bet with EJ.
Yeah.
So
I always bet EJ future. Like the tournament champions, I'll put him on a future. Like all those games, match play. Like
you better look at the odds before you say that because. They're making us pay.
They're not going to be minus.
No, but it's close to even.
Look, I always said it. Simo, Tackett, Belmo. If you're going to put futures, right? Especially big game futures, like where there's a lot of games, right? Those are the guys that are always going to be in the top five of the games when you have that many games. The stars aligned perfectly for him. I really thought that this could have been Belmo if Belmo would have snuck in instead of Martel on yesterday's show. And that's why I always look to see, like, it happened with Dio Bernard on Cheetah, Mike. The stars aligned for him. Only lefty on a pair that he's got a great look. And then the transition is a real thing. It hurts. And it hurts when you're one of those guys that has to deal with it. When you don't have to deal with it as much, there's a reason why guys like, guy like EJ was able to break down his pair. He knew what he was doing, used surface, and it paid dividends for him. And he ended up winning another major and puts himself right in the player of the year mix. My opinion, favorite for player of the year right now. So yeah, man, shouts to EJ though, bro. I mean, he's
definitely he's definitely the favorite for player of the year right now, because not only does he have a major title and a regular title like Troop does, but he also,
hey Glenn,
he also set the he also tied the record for most shows in a row, and I believe there's only a handful of shows that he didn't. There's only two shows I think that he didn't make.
Yeah.
You know, so second, yeah, he's definitely the front runner for player of the year right now. And somebody, whether that's Troop, whether that's Bill, whether that's Simo, is going to have to come out. Whether that's D-Ron, who already has a major title, right? Somebody's going to have to do something remarkable between now and really the end of the PBA playoffs. I'm going to say, I know the schedule doesn't end there. Perhaps the points don't end there, but that's really what's going to count for the player of the year. I mean, if those players I mentioned could find a way to win the tournament champions this week or win the PBA playoffs, I think they can make an argument, and I think it becomes a tougher choice. But, yeah, if things kind of stay the way they are and somebody who doesn't have a title yet this season wins those events, then I'm giving it to EJ Tackett.
Yeah, I want to give a player of the year just a rundown real quick for the people in case you're not up to date with the stats. EJ Tackett right now has two titles, obviously, from the World Series. And that's one major with the win today. He's got 199,000 in earnings, 26,400 in points, 10 total caches with about a 230 average. Okay, 10 caches, Mike, 12 events total. Okay. Bill, who's in second in points, who's got one title, which was the major, 153,000 in earnings, about 19,000 in points, 7 caches, 225 average. And then Kyle Troop, who's the other one you could probably throw in here, 2 titles, including one major, 145,000 in earnings, 7 caches. So not only does EJ right now have 3 more caches than, let's just say, Bill and Kyle, he's got probably another 40,000 to 50,000 on them earnings, out averaging them by 7 to 10 pins, and has a major and is about 5,000 to 6,000 more in points. So EJ is for sure front runner of player of the year right now. I would go on a limb here and say he's going to probably make the show for the tournament of champions. I mean, at this point, it's rare when he doesn't make a show. Okay. So you got to put him on the show at the tournament of champions. I think EJ is going to win it again. I mean, at this point, I mean, how could you bet against him?
No,
Bill would have to be, my brother in the chat says it perfectly. EJ is going to win it unless Kyle or Bill wins the tournament of champions. And I think that's probably a fair statement.
Jeff, what if Kyle and or Bill make the tournament of champions show but don't win, and then win the PBA playoffs, which also counts for a title? Would that matter?
Ooh, that'd be tough. There's a lot of what ifs.
Because, let's say Bill makes the tournament of champions show but doesn't win. Mm-hmm. That would mean that he made 3 major shows. Okay.
Yeah.
He won one of them. Mm-hmm. Right. And then let's say he goes on to win the PBA playoffs. He would probably vault to the top of earnings, number one, and it would be another title. So he'd have a major and a title. He would have made 3 major shows. I mean, I think an argument could be made there. The only problem, I think, for him is that EJ made that run where he made 5 straight shows and tied Mark Roth. I mean, that's some historical stuff. So, yeah. So it's, you know, yeah, I agree with your brother. Yeah. I agree with your brother to a degree. The question, somebody's got to do something to take it from him. It's his right now, unless somebody does something to take it from him.
Here's the question, though. I asked this on the chat prior, and Riggles responded, I know he watches a little bit later, that the Lucky Larson Masters counts for the points, right? But the tour trials are happening for the PBA the weekend or weekend before the trials, from my understanding. No, I'm
before
sorry.
Before the Lucky Larson, yes, Masters.
I'm confused. Yeah, I got confused. The trials are before the Lucky Larson Masters. Now, we could talk good transition to the exemption, right? Because if Lucky Larson counts for points, then why are they having the tour trials before the Lucky Larson Masters? If anybody, you know, wants a little bit of a update here, 43 players in points are getting exemptions for next year, Mike, which means anybody who's 44 in points and below to 100 are going to have to go through tour trials where they're going to be bowling for 12 spots.
Robert with a question in the chat here saying, why would the PBA playoffs count as a win? It's an exhibition invitation. No, Robert, I think you're thinking about something different. The PBA playoffs is where they take, I think this year they're doing the top 16. Past years they've done the top 24, and they rank them based on points, and then they bowl matches all the way through. So yeah, it's not, I mean, it's definitely, it might be called an invitation, but it's earned through points. I definitely wouldn't call it an exhibition. I think it's worth 100,000. The past few years it's been worth 100,000. They didn't, am I right that they didn't have it last year, but they brought it back this year, right? Yeah, and when they did have it previous to last year, it was 100,000. So, I definitely wouldn't describe it as an exhibition. And I do believe it was a title before. I don't know if it's a title now. I think it was a title before. But
I want to bring this comment up because James writes, how good would EJ be if he was backed by one of the big two companies? and had access to their bull reps and multiple brands like those guys do. I'm going to be honest, James. I used to think like this. I thought like this years ago, right? About EJ, right? Imagine if he was with Storm, and imagine if he was with Brunswick and had, you know, all this like access to Purple Hammers and Pitch Blacks and all the stuff. But as he's been, as EJ's been bowling, right? Player of the year last year. He's front runner right now for player of the year. How could you think that motive doesn't work good for him at this point? Like, the kid is completely dominating right now. He's been a top five player or top three player in the world for the past, you know, how many years. So how could you like say, oh, if he was with Storm or he was with Brunswick, he'd be better than he is now. Like, I think that's a real, I don't think that's right. I used to think like that, but I don't think like that anymore. You know, I think he's learned how to use motive and they roll really good for him. And I mean, he won the title today with a ball that wasn't a Venom Shock. He won a ball Thursday, you know, on Shark that wasn't a Venom Shock. So obviously he's using the other balls and he's still winning. So just had to just make that clear. Like, I think he's great with motive right now. And you know what? He's got a probably really good relationship with Brett Spangler, his ball rep. And they're working well together and he's winning. So
I don't think he's getting his full attention?
100%. He should be. He's the face of that company now. You know, he's the best bowler in the world.
I don't think you can question what he's doing.
No. And I mean, I could question now the Storm. I could question a little bit of the stuff Storm is doing right now, because I don't think Storm even had a title this week at the World Series from following it. I don't believe, right? Theo Bernard is in with Storm. Russo's not with Storm. EJ's not with Storm. So they didn't win this week. There's four titles given, right?
And EJ won the other one too, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So they didn't have any titles. So maybe they need to go back and reevaluate their urethane ball for their lefties and see maybe they need to figure out a better ball to give these guys, because I don't think that 78U is doing the trick right now. Just my
All opinion. Right, so you were discussing exemptions. Do you want to give the All people right. an idea of, like, yes. who's in and who's out?
43rd right now is Nathan Bohr. So you got a couple people that are really teetering the line right now. And, look, I'm pretty confident that these numbers that I'm giving are updated numbers, because the PBA website had EJ's numbers updated on this list. So I'm 95% sure that these numbers are updated. 43rd right now, Nathan Board. 42nd, Sean Rash, Mike, teetering, right, that exemption. Jacob Buttriff, Keiko, and Stu Williams are all like 39 to 43. Right. So there's could be a chance that some of those guys, if they don't have a good next couple of tournaments, are bowling PTQs, which would be wild to me, or have to go through tour trials. Right. People who are below the cut line right now, Matt Sanders, Mike Martel, DJ Archer, Chris Barnes, Cortez Shank, Kyle Sherman, Pete Virgos, Nate Purchase, Nick Pate, Kevin McCune, Frankie Lavois, Darren Tang, Maldonado, Bolaby. I mean, there's some pretty big names on this list right now that are below that exemption line, Mike.
No doubt.
I mean, you have
no doubt. I mean,
yeah, which is wild, right? Which is it's a quick season, huh? All the bowling are doing it went pretty quick. Now they find themselves down outside that 43rd, and a lot of those guys are going to be bowling the tour trials, honestly.
No doubt. All right, are you ready to do our rundown here?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, you go ahead. Pick your category.
I like starting with ride with and not ride with. I feel like that's the award we always like seem to start with.
Okay, who you got?
I'm going to start with ride with. I'm riding with Matt Russo this week. I think Matt Russo had a career week and is having a career year. And look, it's unfair to say he's been bowling. He bowled only good at the World Series. Russo's been having a really good year in a year where the lefties have been kind of insignificant, whatever reason that is, right? We talked about this, right? It could be the new urethane rules. It could be, you know, some of the tournaments weren't really, you know, good for a lot of the lefties. Whatever the reason is, Russo's been having a great year. And I think this kind of put his last week put his flag in the ground that he's one of the best lefties on tour. And he just took his thumb out of his ball, which is crazy.
And he just won $70,000 between the title and the second place. Mm. So that's not too bad either, right?
Yeah, I mean,
and it was his first title on TV.
I know, and he just took the thumb out of the ball, so that couldn't have been an easy change for him. If you're bowling with your thumb in the ball your whole career, and then all of a sudden you remove it, obviously it was a right decision, and it's paying dividends for him.
My God, I got to tell you, our fans, it's sometimes, Rob, they read our minds. They read my mind. I had two things written down for this ride with, okay? I had two things written down.
Okay.
The first thing I had written down was, I'm riding with Eric Jones and his dad. Okay? Andrew Ranello in the chat. I'm 100% with you, bro. I'm going to drive. Eric Jones is going to chill and enjoy himself, and his dad's going to sit in the back seat and play the sax for us. No need for the radio. No need for the radio. We're cruising to easy jazz tunes the whole time we're riding. Okay? So that was the first thing I had written down.
Okay.
Lumber Flexual. The second thing I had written down was, I'm riding with Packy and Kevin because they brought the hype show. Shout to them. They put on the best show of the whole week.
They did.
It was great to see that. Kevin Williams on the pre-show of one of the other shows talked about how that's the vibe he wants to see in bowling. He actually talked on the pre-show about how he wants people to boo the bowlers.
My guy.
He did. He said, like, you know, you go to a sporting event and the guy who you're rooting against does something good. What do? You boo. Right. And he said, we should be encouraging that in bowling, where the guy you're rooting against, if he strikes, you don't cheer, you boo him.
So there was an interesting point, Mike, that I believe it was Randy or Rob made about the cheering. Right. And, you know, we didn't talk about getting into this, about the cheering and Packy's trying to get them to cheer while he's bowling. So I believe it's, you know, a better vibe, and it's also less distracting for the players and whatnot. But an interesting point that was made was talking about how people want to see, or people have always treated bowling as like golf, right? Like they're very quiet and people are bowling and it's like a golf type of atmosphere. And I think that is just always been a bowling kind of culture on TV thing, right? I think the league in Maine has kind of, you know, was outside the norm for the show, and maybe the PBA has seen, well, this is pretty awesome. I do remember there was one, Mike, you're more of a bowling historian than I am. They did do this, though, years ago, didn't they, where they were having the fans cheer?
Yeah, in the late 90s.
And it just seemed very fabricated type cheering, right?
But like, that was just, I mean, that was cheering the entire show. It was just like nonstop clapping the entire show. Like it got to be just annoying background noise after a while. You know, this with the chanting, we got to get out of just the chanting. The chanting is just, it's too inane. It's too inane. Listen, I've talked about the environment I want to see. People don't want to hear it, but, you know, if I were in charge, the show would look drastically, drastically different than it does now. You know, they haven't tried anything really different with a bowling set or a bowling show of how to set it up in quite a long time. You know, so, yeah, it would just look really different to me. But, I just like the vibe that those guys brought. It wasn't about the chanting of the names or anything like that. It was just about the show of emotions. I mean, when they struck, they reacted. You know, they looked like they wanted to win. They looked like they were out there bowling with emotion, you know, as opposed to shout to one of the greatest JBT bowlers ever, as opposed to Walter Hastings type robot personalities that, you know, you wouldn't know whether they're shooting 866 or shooting 566. Right. So, yeah, I just, that's why I would ride with Kevin and Packy, just because, not because of the chanting, but because of the hypeness they brought to the show. I want to bring this comment up, Rob. Jared in the chat says, sports psychology has ruined bowling. Bowling was better when guys were on the verge of exploding instead of controlling their breathing. Yeah, Jared, I mean, I think Rob and I would both agree with that. You know, we are products of the 90s, and watching some of the guys that you are talking about, right? So I definitely agree with you that it brings more entertainment value. But at this point, I think it's clear that the bowlers themselves understand the detriment of being on a roller coaster like that of emotions, right? And that's not what we're going to see. Now, one of the changes I would make would be they'd only throw one shot at a time. We've talked about this a lot in the past, and that would give them a chance to maybe show some emotion and not have to throw a shot at right after. And maybe even want to show some emotion to try and rattle your opponent a little bit right before they go throw their shot. So, yeah, I'd ride with Kevin and Packy.
I do want to say about Packy is Packy has slowly became one of my favorite bowlers to watch on TV. Just due to his not being afraid to show emotion and get into it. That Kevin Williams match is a blueprint of what I want to see on a PBA bowling match. And look, I've got a lot of criticism and a lot of shit for my WWE comparison and my over-the-top, you know, mentality when it comes to the PBA, whatever. But, like, if you're asking me on what I want to see, what a PBA match should look like, that's what I want to see it look like. I want to see them going back and forth at each other, a little bit here and there, some emotions, a little bit of talking, but still being able to focus and bowl at a high competitive level. Mm-hmm.
Preach, son. Okay. Say for the people in the back. And listen, can I say one more thing? I actually like it better when it goes from silent, okay, and then they do something good and they explode and they get the crowd up, and then there's a huge explosion from the crowd, and then they quiet down again for the next player. You know, I like that better than the chanting, and then it's an explosion of noise. Like, it's just too much noise. You know, you need that silence in the contrast to the noise. I think for the average viewer, that helps them understand, all right, this is an important part, and this is when they're reacting, you know. So just a point about that. All right, who would your not ride be, Rob?
Who am I not riding with? I am not riding with what did I have down here? I'm not riding with any lefty who didn't make the top 16 at the World Championships.
Oh, boy.
Look, this was your week to have it, Mike, if you were a lefty, okay? And I'm going to talk more of a full-time lefty, someone who's on full-time tour as a lefty. Guys, this was your week. This was your week to get some money, to get some points for your exemption.
To butter your bread, bro.
This was your week, and this was tough leaving the World Series, not making the top 16, and probably finishing like 50th or 60th as a lefty and below. So that's who I'm not riding with any lefty, Mike, who didn't make the top 16.
Well, riding with any lefty that didn't have a good week this week, I feel like you're putting yourself in danger. They might just be driving off a cliff somewhere along the ride to the next event.
Dude, Robert Hamilton, you know, you talked about like fans reading like the show. I had a special mention for Jesper. He did not look happy today. I didn't want to ride with Jesper. I felt bad if Kyle Troop had a ride. It's having a ride with him to Ohio for the Tournament of Champions.
All right, I am not riding with Zulaiman Zulkifli. Okay. Zulaiman Zulkifli, because hear me out. Okay. Bro came from Malaysia to bowl this tournament. Okay. I'm not even sure where Malaysia is, but it sounds far away. I'll say that. It sounds really far away. And bro finished 104th. Okay, so not only do I not want to ride with Zulaiman because they finished 104th, but that commute back to Malaysia has got to be miserable. I mean, that commute would be miserable if I perhaps won a title. it still might be miserable. I might be like, oh, I got to make this commute home now. But to finish, to come from Malaysia and finish 104th and then have to make that commute home, whew, I'm the, sorry, brother. You're what taking that ride by yourself.
What about Hiroki Takada, who finished 106th from Japan?
Did you skip I thought about that. I thought about that. He has other country mates with him.
Ooh, okay.
He has other country mates with him, okay? So, like, he's going to ride with Shota, right? So, like, Shota had a good week. Shota's probably going to pay for some dinners. People are going to maybe want to take pictures with Shota. He's that kind of guy. You're probably going to have a decent, you know, experience on the way home. But okay. Zulaiman Zulkifli was the only person I saw from Malaysia. So, tough.
Unless there's a layover from Malaysia to Japan.
Maybe.
I'm just
maybe.
Kidding. I don't know.
I don't know either. But I'm not taking that ride. I'm sorry.
All right. I hear you. All right, Mike. Let's go to ICU Haas.
Three letters for you. D-E-O.
See, I grouped them because D-O's in my group, but I'm going with the Young Bulls, Mike. The Young Bulls, right? What a week for the
Young Bulls. This is a Young Bull Award, is it not? I did, but to say the Young Bulls, I mean, you got to pick one Young Bull. Who you know.
I picked all the Young Bulls. I picked Eric Jones, Dio Bernard, Nate Purchase, Nicolini Pangalini, or Nicoli. I didn't say that right. I'm also picking Schleibach and Martel, Mike. I mean, what an amazing week these guys had. These are young kids who are, you know, some of them are 19, 20, 22.
But who's the only one to win a title, son?
It was
D-E-O.
D-E-O.
Not to mention that I had that for a $260 cash ticket. So that was nice, too.
By the way, if that was my name, I would call myself D-E-O. Yo.
D-E-O.
I like that. D.E.O. What does this stand for? I don't have any idea, but it sounds awesome.
No, but you're right, Rob. I mean, there were a lot of young bulls who deserve recognition. I'm glad you gave him a shout. But you gotta give that award to Dio because he won the title and got it done.
And I consider Eric Jones going through the ladder yesterday as like a kind of a title.
Thanks, doesn't it? Doesn't it? That must be like a great but empty feeling. I made it through a stepladder.
I know.
But my prize was another stepladder where I had to bowl the best bowler in the world when he has the whole right side to himself. Shake it off, Hoss.
I know. Good experience for him, though, like bowling on TV, though. I mean, that's invaluable for Eric Jones. Having those shows under his belt is just going to pay dividends for him when he finally gets. And he will, trust me, though, these kids are way too talented. You will see them again, and it'll be probably sooner than later for sure. All right, Mike, let's go to I always finish with dumpster diving because it's my favorite. Let's go to Spare Shooter, and there's only one really correct answer for Spare Shooter, and it's Kyle Sherman.
Oh, is that it?
And I saw Nico earlier in the chat. I mean, Mike, he missed a 10-pin when the match was close, and he could have – maybe won a match on TV. And I mean, look, these guys shouldn't be missing single pin spares on TV. It's just, you know, it's, you're a pro, Mike. I mean, you should be making these. I mean, you see those stats on some of these 7 and 10 pins. These guys are crazy. EJ Tack had made 74 out of 76 10 pins, Mike. Jesper was 100%, shot like 86 7 pins or something. So it's like crazy how good these pros are at making single pins. So missing one in the 10th is to me, it's a little bit of a mental breakdown or some nerves, which, you know, Kyle at this point of his career shouldn't have, even though they all, I mean, look, they're human, but.
I'm going to veer off from you here. This is personal for me at this point. Cost me a huge parlay throughout the week. I'd probably be up another, I think, $130, $140.
I know where you're going with this.
If Graham Fa didn't flag the 3-9. Okay. I'm going to go. I ranted about this on Thursday. I'm going to go back and rant about it for a second. He was, I forget who he was bowling, quite frankly, at this point. but he was bowling somebody in a best of five match, and he was up 2-1, and he had basically the game in hand. He was up by like almost 30 pins in the fifth frame, and he goes up and he leaves the 3-9, and son, he flags the 3-9. He missed them both. Okay? He went on to lose the game and lose the match and lose the opportunity to make TV. You know, I can't. I'm sorry. You have to get that award from me if you do that.
Yeah. Oh, that's a bad beat for sure. You know who where my other spare shooter honorable mention would go to, Mike, is Nate Purchase. Because Nate Purchase was bowling Shota in the the Shark. And I believe they were bowling in the top eight. And it was a 1-1 match. And Purchase had Shota dead in that match, Mike. He had him dead. And Purchase left a 7-pin and missed it. And Shota ended up doubling to go up 2-1. And then Shota ended up beating Purchase in game 5. So that spare, in reality of it, Purchase makes that spare. You're looking at a whole new, completely different show on Shark, Mike. And it might actually be you know, I don't know what the different of the seating would have been, but it would have been a completely different show on one spare, because I believe if Purchase makes that spare, he beats Shota, and then Shota doesn't even get on the show. So it's just crazy how one spare could just spin all kinds of different outcomes. You know what I mean?
Yep.
All right, Mike, let's go with my favorite. Dumpster diving gold medal. To me, there's only one award here, and it's just for a reason, a selfish reason, Mike. Joseph Grandin is getting dumpster diving. I mean, Joseph Grandin finished in dead last, Mike. 108 out of 108. Now, the reason why I'm bringing this up in dumpster diving is we normally don't ever give to the person who finishes dead last. I could have gave it to Wes.
Milk Carton.
Forgot Milk Carton.
Milk Carton. It's an easy one. The lefties. Welcome back, guys. We haven't seen you in a while.
My Milk Carton. But let me finish about the Grandin before we get to the Milk Carton, okay? What Bowl TV should do is Bowl TV should mic up Joseph Grandin when he finishes 108 for 45 games. And they should specifically have a separate audio stream where you could just listen to Joseph Grandin for 45 games bowling bad. Literally. Like, I mean, could you imagine just the absolute just disaster that Grandin was self-talking to himself, finishing last of 45 games qualifying? So that's where my dumpster diving would go to, is Joseph Grandin, just in the fact that I'd really like to hear what he was saying. But Mike, okay, well, Sarah, we'll talk about Milk Carton, what it is. It could be a whole different thing. We don't even know at this point.
No, Milk Carton is an award we give out to someone who's been on the Milk Carton. They're missing. They've been missing where they've been, and now they're back. And we're taking them off the Milk Carton. We're giving them the Milk Carton Award. We're not worried about them anymore. They're around. That's why I gave it to the lefties. They've been missing. They were missing at the Masters. Where are they? Are they kidnapped? Are they in hiding? What's going on? Put them on a Milk Carton. Now this week, they're back. Okay? So that's Milk Carton for you, Sarah. All right. Do I get to do dumpster diving gold medal now?
You do.
I obviously had Joe Grandin. I mean, you know, that almost goes without saying. Like, yeah. I wish I could have sat in the settee area with him for all 45 qualifying games. It probably would have been that entertaining. However, I'm not going to give it to Joe Grandin because you already did, and that's too obvious. And we were allowed to pick anybody who bowled for the entire week of the World Series.
Okay?
And if you remember, Rob, before the World Series started, there was a PTQ.
Mm-hmm.
For guys to get into the World Series. The most significant PTQ of the year. And it's not even close. Because if you made this PTQ, you weren't just getting into one tournament. You were getting into four. You were getting into four. Because if you bowled good in the other three, you had a shot at the World Championship, right? And there was one guy who, you know, was, I mean, from my perspective, was probably, might have been bowling for his career out there. Okay. And he didn't bowl well at all. Right. And that was Brad Miller. And, you know, I watched his video. I watch all their content. I watch every video they put out. I watch pretty much. And I watched his video after the PTQ of the World Series. And I have to say it was one of the more down vibe social media videos that I've watched in bowling, period. There was a point in the video where he said, you know, there are a lot of guys out here who are a lot better at a lot of things than I am. And then he followed that up by saying, basically, the only thing I'm good at is spare shooting. And I have a lot of things to work on. You know, and listen, it's tough out there, man. It's tough out there. Like, I'm not even gonna go into the laundry list of names that have gone out there and taken their shot and it hasn't worked out and it just eats you up, right? But yeah, listen, I mean, tough week for Brad Miller, I feel like. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. And again, I watch all their content. So I constantly have been following them for years now in terms of the stuff. I don't watch all the instructional stuff they put out, but I watch all the videos when they're on tour. When they're posting something where they're bowling, I'm watching what they're putting out. And yeah, you know, it's been a tough run, and you know, we talked earlier about guys who aren't going to be exempt and the tour trials and bowling that. And I got to say, like, you know, just the way it sounds, it even sounds like Brad Miller is going to be one of those guys who's on the outside looking in, you know. And, you know, despite the YouTube page and all that, you know, I expect somebody like him with his experience in a setting like a PTQ for the World Series to step up, you know, and do what he needs to do to get in that event and give himself a chance, you know, and he wasn't able to do that. So, you know, he never even made the field. I got to give him dumpster diving of the week.
That's good. I need to give him milk carton, and I think we're done, right?
Yep.
I'm giving a milk carton to Shota Kawazawa.
That's a great pick. A great pick.
He made one show, what they say, back in 2018. And then he finally gets back into the show, the Sharp Championship, leads it, finishes second. I think expectations for Shota, I think if you were probably to interview him, I would imagine he would say it has fallen short, considering the success he's had in Japan. 21 titles in Japan. I think what that does show you, Mike, is how much better the competition is in the United States than in Japan. And I'm even going to just go ahead and say an international in general, right? And there's a lot of great international players that are probably not on the U.S. tour. But it just shows you that Shota's been grinding out, trying to make the PBA in the United States thing work, and he just hasn't been that successful. So I'm curious to see Shota carries this, this show that he made in almost winning, if he carries it for his future like performances. But that's who I pick.
Okay. All right, Rob, are we ready to give the people what they want?
Let's do it.
All right, do you want to go first or you want me to go first?
You go first, because I'm going to try to share. I have a video that I need to share, so I'm going to let you go.
Okay, my worst of the week this week comes to us from one of from friend of the show, Tim Sorrells. Tim, what's good? Tim's always reaching out to chop it up, talk bowling, always sending me good stuff. And he sent me a YouTube video earlier this week from a YouTube poster account named Clueless Millennial. Clueless Millennial is the name of this account. Okay. And the name of the video, if you want to look it up, is Bowling Alley Disaster. Who is responsible? Okay. That is the name of this video. Now, when you see the title of this video, what comes to mind that's going to happen? I thought someone's going to throw the ball through the ceiling. Somebody's going to have the ball leave their hand going backwards and it hits a piece of equipment and breaks it. Somebody's going to throw the ball down the lane and bust a light at the end of the lane or something of this nature, right? That's what I'm thinking in my head. Well, really, what the video is about is this guy's ball getting damaged. Okay, it's about his ball getting damaged. And this dude, I'll be honest, I didn't even make it halfway through this video. Okay, I probably should, because it's the unintentional comedy here is just very high, which I enjoy usually. But I couldn't make it all the way through the video. This dude goes on a 30-minute detailed scientific breakdown, making a case of why the bowling alley should be responsible for this damage to his ball. Now, the worst part about this video is that the damage to his ball isn't even that bad. It's not even that bad. Like, it's something I would consider just, yeah, bring it to the pro shop. They're going to fix that right up. They're going to, you know, just put a little plug right there and yep, sand it up and you're good to go. You're all good. You know, not a big deal. Not only is this video terrible, okay, and hilarious at the same time, the comments are also hilarious, where one person comments, this is Typhondio 0000, always bring a test ball or one of the available balls at the alley and use them before you put yours down the alley. Yeah, I mean, how did I forget about that, to bring a test ball to throw down the alley and make sure my ball isn't going to get chipped when I throw it down the alley? The other worst part about this video is that the place where he was bowling at when this happened, if I understand correctly, actually has above-ground ball returns. They're like new style above ground ball returns, but they're above ground ball returns. So I kind of think all right, above ground ball return. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, there's a chance, you know, ball's rolling up, it's hitting that stop thing. Like, yeah, it's going to catch a nick here or there, you know, like.
Those names are from the 40s, Mike.
Yeah. No. It's like a new style.
Oh.
Above ground. Yeah, yeah. If you check the video, that's actually one of the interesting things about it. There's not many views on this video. It has about 1,000 views. 11 days ago it was posted. He's got some followers on his YouTube. Has 40 comments. But you guys can go check it out. Again, the video is called Bowling Alley Disaster. Whose fault is it? Who is at fault? So I just want to say in closing with my worst of the week this week, sometimes these worst of the weeks give me an opportunity to throw something out there that I really have a pet peeve for, I guess you could say. And this is one of those things. I'm not with people who complain about a little nick or a little damage on their ball. It's a bowling ball. It's not a diamond. I know it costs some money. I understand that, you know, but you're buying it to hurl it down a fake wood surface at pins. Like, what do you think is going to happen? You know, it's going to incur some collateral damage in that process. Just keep it moving. Just keep it moving. I mean, unless it absolutely impacts your use of the ball, just keep it moving. You know, you're getting rid of the ball eventually. These are disposable products we're talking about. Okay, so I don't know. It's not a diamond. That's all I'm saying.
You know, my quick pet peeve is on that area is when people post pictures of their ball cracking, and I get it, right? Cracks happen. I've seen balls crack on the shelves of pro shops without even being drilled. Okay, the performance balls, especially because the chemical reaction of the surface is always moving, they're always changing, so cracks are going to happen, right? But my biggest pet peeve is when people are giving comments on what they shouldn't have done to met the ball crack, and they give like 15 different explanations. Everybody, you should have beveled the fingers, or you shouldn't have drilled it close to the pin.
The bridge is too large.
Did you keep it on your floor, or was it a hardwood floor, or was it a carpet floor? Like, people are like getting all scientific on why their bowling ball cracked, and it's just amazing how many different explanations and reasons they give for why my bowling ball cracked. It's hilarious. Okay, my worst of the week is got sent to me. I'm not saying who sent it to me because it's anonymous. I'm going to share this video. Hopefully you guys can
see it. I want to say no more anonymous worst of the week going forward.
No, because people have to be comfortable sending me a worst of the week. So this is a video of a Boca Bolero, okay, that has no outside food and drink policy. Last night, the management spoke for 5 minutes on the loudspeaker about not bringing them in. It seemed a little excessive, but whatever. But then a guy had a cup of coffee, and he finished it. And when they asked him to throw it out, this is the outcome because he drank his coffee. Bolero called the cops, Mike, on this guy because he drank a cup of coffee that was outside the establishment in a Bolero center. And they literally called the police on this guy. And this is the video of them talking to this guy about why he brought in a cup of coffee, Mike, outside the establishment. So I guess my biggest – and reason why I bring this up on my worst of the week, Mike, is because, like, I understand, I guess, in a way, especially if you're a bowling proprietor – if you're bringing like outside food, right, and you bring in like fast food or whatever it is you bring into the bowling center, and there's a bowling alley snack bar, whatever. But if I have a Starbucks, Mike, which, by the way, I see a lot of people when I'm bowling tournaments, and the tournaments at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. or whatever, walking in with Starbucks, including myself, I will bring in an outside cup of coffee, right? Because at the time you bowl in the mornings, like sometimes like you can't even get a cup of coffee at the snack. Like, who wants to drink bowling alley like Bolero coffee? You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you just want to go get a good fresh cup of coffee from Pete's or from Starbucks or whatever. But for them to call the cops on a guy because he drank a cup of coffee is just absolutely ridiculous. And to me, it just shows you how like ridiculous Bolero could be sometimes.
Yeah, but you say you understand corporate America.
I do.
And I think that this is probably one of those situations where it's either an all or nothing. Like, because if they allow one person to have a Starbucks coffee and bring that in, well, then the person who wants a Dunkin' Donuts coffee wants to bring that in. And then the person who wants an iced coffee wants to bring that in.
But the
person who wants a cold soda wants to bring that in. So, like, where do you draw the line?
You think that their reaction to him drinking the coffee was justified them calling the cops?
No, I think that's ridiculous. But I don't know. I mean, I'd have to have more context. Did they ask the guy to leave?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know. I don't know.
How did it get to that point, right? Or was it like, oh, I asked that guy to throw the coffee out, I'm calling the cops. I don't think the cops would show up if they called and said, oh, somebody here wouldn't throw a cup of coffee out, you know? So I don't know. I mean, I would need more context.
Okay. And, fair enough.
And listen, I've been to other bowling alleys, to be fair, that are non-Bolero, that are privately owned, that have signs up all over the place saying no outside food or drink. And we have cameras everywhere. And if we see you, then we're gonna kindly ask you to leave, and we're not gonna give you a refund, you know. And yeah, I mean, I know you have to draw the line somewhere.
Jimmy said he was drinking the coffee with malice. He was like, I could just see him taking.
I'm gonna drink this coffee. Yeah.
And he was just like,
yeah.
Could you imagine the front desk person was like, "Sir, you can't drink your coffee here," and the guy's just doing this, like this. He's like flipping. He's flipping the front desk off while he's like drinking his coffee. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, because let's be honest, this is really about food and alcohol. That's really what it's about, right? It's
no test balls either, Mike.
Yeah, no outside food or drink, no test balls. This is more about food and alcohol than it is about coffee, right? No one's making killer margins on coffee, right? But on the alcohol and the food, they are, you know. And I don't know.
Maybe there was liquor in the coffee. Maybe
I had a Zambuco. But I just think it's a hard road for Bowlero to go down because, you know, do they want to be more friendly to their regular repeat league bowler customers? You know, like if you have a high school league that bowls in a Bowlero center, you know, do you really expect all those kids who come in a few days a week to bowl high school to purchase food and drink strictly from the Bowlero? I mean, the reality is that some of the kids probably don't have the money to purchase food or drink strictly from the Bowlero. And what, parents are never supposed to be allowed to bring in cupcakes or donuts or, you know, something, you know, for the I mean, so yeah, it's just I don't know. Like, it's one of those things that you know, Rob, how there's like some restaurants that at a certain point at night they become more like a nightclub. Like they take the tables out and they put the tables away and it's a dance floor and it's more of a, if I'm involved in Bowlero, that's what I would tell Bowlero they need to do. Bowlero needs to be two different, completely two different things at two different times of the day. And they need to decide when that time switch is going to happen, right? At one point of the day, that for a good part of the day, they need to be league bowler and family friendly, right? And that demands being more lenient with outside food or drink, you know. Letting the league bowlers bowl without the cosmic bowling on, you know, practice, et cetera, right?
During the day?
What's up?
A little bit of cheaper lineage for the league bowlers.
Exactly. Okay. But then, you know, I would try and convince their executives to say, okay, but then let's say 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. Okay. 7 p.m. even if you want. Once 7 p.m. hits, all this other stuff needs to be wrapped up. It's almost like we close down, we clean everything up, we get everybody out, and we reopen in a half hour. And now it's different. Now there's security here. There's no outside food or drink. It's a higher price to get in. It's more premium, but it's a more amped up experience too. You know, the TVs are on in the end of the lane TVs, and the lights are going, and the cosmic bowling's on. And then you're not mixing those crowds. You know, like you're not having like some open bowlers who want to bring their snacks in, you know, with the people who they really want to, you know, buy their alcoholic drinks there. Bowlero After Dark. I mean, you could call it that if you want. Like, you could joke with me if you want, but there's trampoline park places that do that. You know, that do you know, Urban Air After Dark, and it's like for adults only. You know, so that would be my fix for them on that.
I actually think that's a great idea, especially if it's going to help league bowlers maybe want to go practice more during the day instead of paying, you know, $6 a game or $5 a game.
Yeah, and listen, league should just know that, like, Friday and Saturday, if you want to bowl, Fridays are done. There's no leagues on Fridays, okay, because by 7 o'clock they're going to want to get – the higher paying customers in there, right? Maybe even earlier on a Friday. You want to bowl a league on a Saturday at Bowlero, you better be wrapped up by 7 o'clock. You know, and again, that makes it a little bit easier. Like if the bowlers want to have a little celebration for the holidays or something and bring in some trays of food, Bowlero can make a different policy for their league bowlers than their open bowlers. You know.
Well, guess what's going to happen here now that the summer is coming? Bowlero is probably during the day. Some of them, they don't even open till 4 o'clock.
Right.
So it's talk about a bad experience for the league bowler. Is like if I want to go practice at a Bowlero center, like I have like a 2 hour window sometimes because the league start at 5:36 or 6:30 and it opens at 4. I have to get to the center from 4 to 6:30, and I get there I bowl three games and I pay $19.50 and I leave. And it's just like, dude, like, man, and I have to hope to God that the lanes are at least halfway oiled, that they're not giving me some bullshit from 3 days ago that haven't been oiled in 5 days. So it's a terrible experience of some of the Bowlero centers for the league bowler. It's too expensive. You're not getting a very good practice. And, you know, I feel bad for people who don't have legit places around them that they can go to that are more affordable. Like, it's tough. Like, in order for me to get a good practice, I have to go to B3 and I have to spend, you know, the money to bowl for the hour on a sport. Just like if you were to go to Parker's Center and train there, you probably have to pay. You have to pay for the good experience to bowl on a sport, whatever. So, yeah, no, it's a valid point, Mike, and I really like that idea. If Bowlero, all of a sudden, we hear a Bowlero After Dark marketing promotion come, you could we could probably sue them for stealing your idea, Mike.
All right. We'll use your brother as our lawyer.
Yeah. Oh, God, we will never win enough.
All right. Let's... My final thought is collegiate championships took place. Spoiler alert. I'm going to discuss who won. If you don't want to hear it, turn this down. I'm not even sure who won the guys. Does anybody in the chat know who won the guys? I know who won the girls. Wichita State beat Jack State, the NCAA champion, you know, at the ITC. So how's that work? Like, now you got two girls champions, I guess. There's an NCAA champion and an ITC championship. Would have been cool if Jack State would have been able to sweep that. That's quite an accomplishment to say we're the best team, period, regardless of what you want to win in. Okay, yeah. Weber ended up winning it. Okay, that's amazing. I followed it a little bit throughout the week when I could, and Weber was the number one qualifying, right? And number one qualifier. Then they bowled it to the 16 seed, and they lost, Rob, in the first round. So they got bounced to the loser's bracket in the first round. They then made their way all the way through the loser's bracket, and the team that beat them made their way to the semifinal, basically the final of the winner's bracket. They were one of two teams standing at the end of the winner's bracket. It was them and Wichita. They lost to Wichita. Weber then avenged their first round loss against that team and beat them in the loser's bracket to send them home. Then went on to bowl Wichita and beat them 4-3, 4-0 twice to get to the national championship and obviously win it, I think, against Lawrence Tech. So, you know, I mean, obviously, Rob, we bowled that, you know. It's a thing that we fondly remember. So I always try and follow the ITCs when they're going on.
That Wichita team is still Ryan Barnes and Spencer Robarge and
those Alan guys. Keplinger, yeah. Keplinger
and, what's his face?
TJ Rock.
TJ Rock, yeah. They got banned. That team is for them to lose the first that much. Woo! God, that's not a bit entertaining for sure. I'm pissed.
Well, yeah, it's going to air. It's going to air in a couple weeks. You know, I don't think they showed the final on Bowl TV. They just showed up to the TV shows. So,
That's what Mike was just saying, that was the team that they ended up up.
No, not Jeff. It wasn't in the final. It wasn't in the final for the championship. It was in the final of the loser's bracket in their side of the bracket. If you remember, for ITCs, there's a bracket with two sides. And whoever comes out, winners or losers bracket, makes the show. So
Mark in the chat just brought up about Kerosene won again.
Carson.
Carson
Lukosius.
Carson Lukosius. She's starting to make some noise, Mike, in the PWBA circuit. So
yeah, regional. You know, I mean, I don't know. Well, first of all, I've watched her since high school. I said on Twitter to Jeff Rickles today that, yeah, her girls' high school team is probably the best girls' high school team I've ever seen. They used to show up to tournaments and they beat all the boys' teams. Obviously, except for my team. They wouldn't beat my team. But they beat the majority of the boys' teams, and they were super impressive. Super impressive as a high school team. I don't know what her plans are. She's bowling the national PWBA tour or not. She probably should be, right? But yeah, that's another win that I saw. So no doubt. Shout to that.
Before I get into my final thought.
All right, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So my final thought real quick is, Mike, bowling had a topic on Jeopardy. I know people were talking about it. It was pretty interesting. Some of the questions, there were some that I didn't even know about. I didn't even know really like the five pin is called the king pin. So that was news to me. I was really shocked that actually somebody knew that. But I brought a topic that I wanted to do on the show and got shut down by you. And I wanted to wonder, I wanted to do it like a Jeopardy style, like questions, like obviously sweep the rack type questions where I would ask maybe probably the crowd or our people here and maybe give away a prize. And your response to me was, I hate Jeopardy. It sucks, or something in that nature. So I wanted to ask you a question before we logged off. What can you hate about Jeopardy? Like, legitimately, it's the most simple game show, and it's been on for years.
Well, because just number one, it's generally uncool. Okay, it's generally uncool. Like I've always viewed Jeopardy as something that's generally for nerds. Okay, now shout to all my nerds out there, but you know, it's generally for like the true bookworms out there. The kid, not even the bookworms, because I'm a book. I love to read. It's for the people who used to like read the encyclopedia. You remember that kid? It was probably your brother, Jeff. Jeff, were you like that? Were you one of those kids who would read the encyclopedia? He went to Stuyvesant High School. No. He probably read an encyclopedia.
He didn't read anything until he went to law school and actually had to read.
I don't believe that for a second.
He actually hated reading. I remember.
Stuyvesant High School. I don't believe that for a second.
Naturally speaking. Yeah, so, he hated reading. No, he became a lawyer.
Yeah, that's like a lawyer, yeah.
Yeah, that's like a doctor hating blood. It's pretty much.
So generally, it's uncool. Okay, that's number one. Number two, it's something that reminds people of school, because that's like the go to cool activity. Like, oh, we're gonna prepare for the test by playing Jeopardy. All right, red team, blue team. Okay, here we go. Let's play Jeopardy. So that makes it uncool as well. Sure. Nonetheless, another point is that people, especially my mom, shout to moms, always look at people who are on Jeopardy and like, oh, the people on Jeopardy, they're so smart. They're so intelligent. Do you watch Jeopardy? I feel like watching Jeopardy makes you smarter. And I have to be honest with you, I don't really think it has much to do with intelligence. It's just like random knowledge. It's just random knowledge. It's like the ability to figure out the clue in random knowledge. So like,
all right,
I'm not on the Jeopardy. I'm not about it. You know, maybe if Alex Trebek was still around, I'd be a little bit more accepting of it, because he made it somewhat cool. But I'm going to say this: the only thing cool about Jeopardy is that it was in White Men Can't Jump. Okay, that's the only cool thing about Jeopardy. I'm serious. Like, the fact that it was part of that movie made me somewhat appreciate Jeopardy. But outside of that, I kind of look at it like very uncool thing. Okay. You know?
Good. I'm glad we got that sorted out. We could. I could.
See, and that Lou's commenting saying Jeopardy makes him feel stupid. And I'm a very well-read person. I read a lot. I'm finishing up a 400-page book that I started a couple weeks ago tonight called Murder City. It's a great book. It's about Juarez, Mexico. You all should check it out. But Lou says Jeopardy makes him feel very stupid. I'll be honest. I watch Jeopardy. I get a lot of the answers right. I get a lot. Now, I don't know to say it in what is Shakespeare, Alex? Okay? Like, I don't like that aspect of it either, that if you don't say the answer right, you don't get the points. Like, it's either right or it's wrong. So I actually don't feel stupid when I watch Jeopardy. I'm often like, I know that. I've turned it on with my mom, because my mom is like an avid Jeopardy watcher. And when she's up at my house, I'll turn it on when she's there because she wants to watch it. It's almost like she can't miss an episode of Jeopardy. And I will answer a lot of the questions. She'll say, "Oh, I didn't know you had all this knowledge. Where do you get all this knowledge from?" And I'm like, "It's not knowledge. It's random facts." And yeah, I'm just not with it. And yes, Jimmy in the chat saying I've given this rant for. I have, because it's my mom. My mom is an avid every night Jeopardy watcher since I was a kid. And yeah, I'm not about it. And I always have to explain myself.
All right. Well, I'm glad we got that story. Now everybody could sleep tonight knowing that, you know, we'll never have a Jeopardy.
I'm glad we extended the podcast by 5 more minutes for that. Great.
I'm good. Now everybody knows why we'll never have a Jeopardy segment on Sweep the Rack. But all right, Mike, I think that's about, we did a Risk of the Week already. I was going to play the little thing we do. Yeah.
We're good.
Are we good? I don't know. We haven't talked about going live. I think we might just wait till the Sunday show, right?
Yeah, next Sunday we'll be here. I don't know what time because I don't know what time I'll be back from AC on Sunday.
Okay, but for people, the show is on Fox, Big Fox at 1 p.m. I believe that's Eastern Daylight
Time. There's a league show as well.
Yeah,
on Saturday.
The PTQ start tomorrow for the Tournament of Champions.
Yeah, shout to Bet Rivers. I hope we're going to be able to bet on every game and match play again. I want everyone to know. Okay, rest easy. Your boy did it. Your boy transferred over the vast majority of his winnings for this week. So I ain't giving it all back. I'm restarting with a little bankroll here. But yeah, we're ready to get after him again this week, especially for the match play. Yeah, I might sit the whole week out until the match play this week. That's what I'm going to try to do.
So match play starts Wednesday evening.
Yes, sir.
And then it's 18 games of match play. This is pretty much old school type
18
format.
18 or 24?
No, sorry, 24. It's 8
24,
games.
24.
8 games. Sorry. 18 games of qualifying, 24 match play. So this is like one of those old school type formats that the PBA used to run when we were younger, which I love this format. So it's 18 games of qualifying and then 24 match play and then top five stepladder Sunday, Big Fox, Doyle, the champ. What's up, man? We got a lot of bowling.
I put futures on Bill O'Neill and Chris Prather. If anybody wants to follow,
gotcha.
I took those. O'Neill and Chris Prather.
I'll look tonight at the futures. But we all know where I'm betting the same three. Guys like Simo love this type of format.
No doubt. You got a lot of legends in the field this week, too, so enjoy that. I'll be watching. Hit us up on social media. On X, he's at BrooklynRob11. I'm at the 215. Email us. We love getting the emails. There's a ton to talk about right now, but when things calm down a little bit, we'll definitely share a lot of the emails we've been getting. We love the emails. SweepTheRack@gmail. Rob, we appreciate everybody joining us, checking us out. Hit the subscribe button, hit the like button. We appreciate that.
Tell your friends, tell your peeps.
No doubt. Spread the word about the podcast. We appreciate it. Rob, we will see everybody next Sunday night. Enjoy the Tournament of Champions, Joe.
Later, guys.
You are now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.